Former Indians pitcher Jason Stanford, of course, our buddy here on The Fan. Jason, how you doing these days?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. We're good, man. Just enjoying some nice hot weather finally.
Yep. Sorry you get to miss Nick this week, but I know sometimes that can be a blessing in disguise, right, Jason?
We won't say that on the air, ever.
He probably wouldn't invite you over for burgers either, so it's okay, Jason. We're in that same camp together.
I think we're all still waiting on that one, right?
You know, you're all right. Nick needs to have a Nick-funded cookout just for the three of us.
Saying that he would invite JP is one thing. Mac can be invited as well,
and we can all just drink on his dime. We can eat on his dime, and he can just go around the room saying thank you to all of us.
That would be great. Hey, I'm in for that one.
Sounds like a fun time. All right, so Jason, why we wanted to have you on, though, because you obviously you got a close relationship with the Guardians, and you know baseball better than anybody, and right now I'm having a hard time just with what's happened over the past couple weeks with this team, and really just this anemic offense that everybody could have seen coming, Jason. I don't know why they won't call up some of the younger players. I want DeLauder here. I want Kafis here. I want Brito here, and they just won't do it. What's your read?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think the biggest take right now is when you have even some young guys struggling at the big league level, you know, they start putting more pressure on themselves. I know they had a closed-door meeting, players only, the other day. A lot of times what happens in there is, you know, trying to take the blame off of everybody and kind of make sure that the team is going back, you know, the same direction. You still have a young manager. You know, everybody forgets this is only his second year really managing, you know, and, yes, as good as they did last year, when your offense is struggling and you have some superstars that in the making down in the minor leagues, you know, you want to see, especially as a fan, you want to see those guys come up and see what they're capable of doing. You go unload a bunch of veteran guys this offseason, and it's tough to watch right now, this offense.
Jason, you talk about the players-only meeting, but I think a lot of attention was made, and I know we talked about it here at the station a lot, like when Jose Ramirez got hit by that pitch last weekend. And then there was just, it felt like no real emotion from his teammates. And even Stephen Vogt, to a degree, like he stepped out, but he just kind of like kindly got walked back to the dugout. What did you make of how that whole scene sort of played out, especially on the heels of that player-only meeting where it felt like there was maybe some iteration of them trying to light a fire into themselves?
Well, I think some of it too, right? Your best player gets hit, and unfortunately, nobody really comes to the forefront to protect that guy. If it's old school baseball, if you're going back to the, you know, the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s, if that happens to your best player, I promise you somebody is getting lit up and there's going to probably be a bench clean brawl somewhere. Unfortunately, the young players, they don't see it that way anymore this year. And I'm not going to say everybody's in it for themselves, but you have to have some type of fire as a competitor to go back and be like, you know what? Our dude just got hit. I've got to back him. I've got to protect him somehow, some way. And a lot of times those bench clearing brawls or, you know, everybody comes out, that starts to light something. It can't be the manager and the pitching coach and the bench coach, you know, constantly saying, hey, come on, guys, let's do a better job. At some point, the players have to take accountability and do it themselves.
No, I agree with that, but I also thought in that moment it would have been a good opportunity for Vogt to get out there and maybe go like Lou Piniella style. I'm not saying you have to throw bases, but like go out there and really make it known that this is something that isn't acceptable, and then from there you see where it goes.
No, I agree. You know, I think look at it this way: if Terry Francona is managing this team still, you know, he's going to say something because he's been there and done it for a long, long time. Steven's been there as a player, but from a managerial perspective, he's still learning the ropes. And that team last year, it was handed to him to some extent. He did a very nice job of managing it early in the season and late in the season to get him to the playoffs. But when you're still learning how to manage your players, you still have to make sure that you're not – I'm not going to say by any means that he's not, but just to make sure that you're pushing the right buttons. And, yeah, that probably would have been the right time to come out and be like, right now, right here, somebody needs to take ownership of it and do their part.
Former Indians pitcher Jason Stanford joining us here on 92.3 The Fan. Jason, let me ask you, you know, Spencer brought up the players-only meeting. It happened on Friday night, and then Saturday and Sunday, Guardians obviously lost those games. They get swept. I was thinking in the moment when it happened, Max Strus with the Cavs playoff game before Game 5, sending the text message to try to rally the troops, and then they just you watch them just have a complete nothing burger of a performance. But you, as a former athlete in those locker rooms, do you feel like those player-only meetings or those player-led initiatives, do you feel like they work more times than not? Or at the end of the day, is it just something that really doesn't actually impact anything?
I think it's a double-edged sword. If you're a player and you pay attention to what's being said and you actually listen to what each player might be saying, or even if it's just the veteran player speaking, and you take ownership of yourself to do better as an individual, that's when the team gets better, you know, and I look at it right now, offensively, there is no offense. You know, they have struggled. I mean, this past June was awful. You know, they're second worst in batting average. I know a lot of people don't care about batting average, but batting average shows you get on base, you know. So If you're not walking, if you're not getting hit by pitches and you're getting base hits, okay, now you're doing something, you know. And maybe it goes back to the basic stuff of just breaking it down. Lay down some bunts at times. There's still shifts that go on. Do some hit and runs. You know, change up the dynamics of let's just try to swing for the fences from one, you know, every once in a while. There isn't a power hitter on this team right now consistently. They've got a couple guys that, you know, have double-digit home runs, but there isn't somebody that in the middle of the lineup where you're like, oh, my goodness, like, I've got to pitch around him. You know, you pitch around Jose Ramirez, but he's not a home run hitter. He's an all-around great player. You know, so when you have these player-only meetings, those are the times when, yes, it can go one way, and we didn't see it, you know, on Saturday and Sunday, but you're also going into a very tough run right now of going against the Cubs as well. So you hope that this off day played in with the player-only meeting, you know, maybe it gave them a day to rest and get ready for this road trip.
Jason, it's been a couple years now since Jose Ramirez obviously signed the massive extension he did and took the pay cut to stay here. And I'm assuming he did that with the understanding that, like, hey, yes, we know he likes it in Cleveland and all that. But I assume he thought that the team was, like, on this upward trajectory. And it certainly looks like to this point, especially on the heels of making the ALCS last year and then not really investing in the team, actually getting worse in some respects. I just want to ask you, like, straight up, have the Guardians, from your perspective, wasted already, like, a good chunk of the prime years of Jose Ramirez?
I wouldn't say they wasted it. I would say that a lot of times when, and they're not a small market team, let's call them a mid-market team, okay? If a mid-market team is looking at certain investments, then it would be tough to only have a couple guys that are really strong, like a Jose Ramirez, like a Stephen Kwan. If the mid-market team takes away some of the analytical side of it and goes for the gusto with one starting pitcher, one middle lineup guy, and utilizes some of their funds and resources that they have and take the analytical side out of it, just go for the player that would complement some of these guys right now, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. You know, and that's the frustrating part at times as a former player, is that now you're done looking at it from the player side of it, and you look at it from a fan side of it or an analytical side of it, or an investment side of it, business side, you know, and you're like, this team is missing one key ingredient. And you can't, you know, you can't equate the injuries that come into it. You can't play that out ahead of time. But you can also say, if we're one or two pieces away from where we were last year, and some of the other teams got better, why didn't we do what we were supposed to do to stay up with those guys? Detroit Tigers went out and made a splash, right? And look what they're doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the difficult part, is that you've got a young core group of players, you know, up to the northwest of us, that they added a couple of key ingredients, and, man, they've taken a run with it. And the Guards didn't do that so far. And that, yeah, for me, that's frustrating at times.
Yeah, and even frustrating on that point, just a couple guys that you mentioned within the Tigers. Like, we talked about Torres for, it felt like, weeks on end. He was sitting right there, obvious choice. And now he's going to make the All-Star team this year, Jason, for Detroit.
And that's what I'm talking about, right? You get a guy that like Torres, right? A good player. Now that Sonny goes to a team that he complements everybody else, stays in his lane, does what he's supposed to do. You know, all of a sudden he's in the comfort zone now with a couple other guys, and boom, becomes an all-star right there. And that's all I'm saying is that there's guys out there that if you give them a change of scenery, it could benefit them and it could benefit the team. I'm telling you right now, I only played in the big leagues with the Indians, but I played in other organizations afterwards. The guards have everything that you want as a player. They've got a good fan base. It's a good city. It's, you know, it's a sleeper city is what I would call it. The ownership, though, has to look at it that, yes, if we make the right investments, not the big investments, but the right investments, this team could go a long way.
Jason, we've gone down this path now of talking about like the team investing more and spending more money, which is always where I feel like the Guardians conversation tends to lead, ironically enough. But along those lines, and maybe bigger picture, do you think in some ways like a work stoppage might be needed in 2026 as they work through a new CBA to sort out some of these just discrepancies that exist between the haves and the have-nots of this sport to try to get everybody on more of a level playing field? And it's like, and I say that because I think I did this one time, like where I went back, and I think baseball actually has had the most different teams win a championship since like the 1980s. So it's not that I don't think there's parity in terms of like teams can win it, but it's more so parity of like being able to invest the same way and spend on certain free agents. So do you think something like a work stoppage might be needed to actually have serious conversations and invoke serious change about that portion of the sport?
So I looked at it, you know, from the other perspectives of pro sports with the NBA and the NFL doing, you know, their caps and yeah. NHL. And I looked at it, I'm like, okay, does baseball need a cap? And then, like you just mentioned, there's been multiple teams winning multiple titles, or there's been multiple teams at least winning one title over the last 10 years. And I don't think that, you know, MLB needs a cap, whether it's a cap at the bottom, you know, at the base, or a max cap. What I think they need is ownerships, and this goes across the board, it's not just with the guards, but across the board, that if you're going to own a team, then spend the right money. You don't have to spend a bulk amount of money, but spend the right money on certain players. And I look at the Dodgers. The Dodgers go out and they spend a ton of money, and they have a ton of money. But they're also deferring a lot of money, too, down the road, so they can do this right now. You know, and I think that's the biggest key, too, is strategically, how can you work these contracts to where it makes sense for the organization as a whole? To where it benefits the organization for 5 to 7 years, as opposed to maybe a 3-year window, you know, with some of these guys. And I think if you go and you look at the player side of it, and you say this player has a window of 3 to 5 years, can we get him along with 3 or 4, maybe 5 other guys to make a core group and make a run for it? And then if you make that run, are other players that are looking at that saying, I want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of that, and I want to be a part of that. And all of a sudden, now you've got like 8 or 9 core guys, and now you're making a run multiple years instead of just 1 or 2 years at a time.
Jason, it's always a pleasure. Hopefully you get a lot of golf in, a lot of sunny time in the next couple days. Are you a fireworks guy or no?
A little bit of fireworks. I will tell you this. I went to a fireworks show on Saturday night. I've been to Disney World a number of times with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen a better fireworks show in my life than what my friends put on this past weekend. I'll tell you this. Over $7,000 worth of fireworks.
Wow.
Over 30 minutes worth of fireworks with a laser light show and a little bit of music in the background. It was so awesome. In Podunk, Champion, Ohio.
It beat out Disney? What they could put together? Maybe Disney needs to hire your friends is what's going on here, Jason.
Well, I mean, here's the funny thing. He is a certified fireworks technician, so he can go around the state of Ohio and do this.
Oh, so, and you have the great stuff then. He knows all the tricks.
You got the ins. That's what we need.
All right, well, I'll come over for...
It was awesome.
I'll join you for his next one, and we'll hang out there.
Well, no, when Nick has a barbecue, you just have to invite this guy, and then we can do the fireworks show at Nick's house. There we go.
And Nick can also pay the $7,000 tab,
too. I won't be there, though, because apparently I won't get the in. So.
Jason.
I will tell you guys this real quick, though. Tomorrow morning, Frontline to Field Foundation, we are taking 12 veterans out on Lake Erie to go walleye fishing.
Sweet.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have a blast with a bunch of veterans on Lake Erie for walleye fishing tomorrow with
Love
our
it.
Foundation.
Hopefully you catch a lot of them, and always great stuff that you're doing, not only for the veterans, but everything in the community as well. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks, Jason.
Thanks, guys.
All right, good stuff right there, our buddy Jason Stanford on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Back to what he had to say about the Guardians, and where exactly is your interest in tonight's Guardians game? It's Jonathan Peterlin and Spencer German with you guys. Afternoon Drive right here on The Fan.
As he was talking about the deferred money thing and like how the Dodgers are doing that to stay competitive right now, it just kind of hit me like, why don't the Dolans ever consider doing deals that way? Because like, I understand maybe early on when they own the team, well, they figure they're going to own the team for a while, right? So that's just money that you have to pay.
Yeah.
But now that we know we're towards the tail end of their ownership,
you're going to write checks that Blitzer has to cash.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you do, it's the same thing that like the Celtics did. Like the Celtics owner last year, he paid all these guys and was like, yeah, we're going to be in the tax. And he's like, but I'm selling the team anyway, so what do I care?
I'll go on top.
Yeah, so I'm saying, like, if you're Paul Dolan and you're and all you hear is people criticize how cheap you are, you don't spend enough money, you don't go for it. Why not, understanding that you might only own the team for like another like 2 to 3 years anyway? Well, hey, let's go sign a couple guys. I'm not even saying you got to do like the mega, like, I'm not saying like go get Juan Soto or anything, but like sign a couple of guys, do some deals that are like deferred money. And then it's the next person's thing to worry about. And in the meantime, like, you maybe get to go out a hero if you actually bring a title to Cleveland.
It would be really funny if he spent like $105 million on total payroll and then had like a $50 million a year deal that was just deferred that doesn't start until 2035. And Butcher's like, so what about that deal? Oh, it didn't start until 2035.
You got time.
Did that intentionally. It's okay. Yeah, what does go along with this? I don't know.
I'm not saying it's a foolproof plan. It's the way that this world kind of works now. Like, it's the same thing. The Bucks just did it, right? Like, they just deferred all this money in Damian Lillard's deal by waiving him. And they're like, yeah, we'll pay it later. And I don't know that they're planning on selling the team.
It's becoming more and more a thing. I mean, today is Bobby Bonilla Day, one of the most famous deferred payment stories of all time. And Adam Wainwright starts his today.
When does that expire? 40-something?
Hey, we got a long time. And I really wanted to avoid bringing up Bobby Bonilla Day at any point in this show, because everyone does it at some point.
By the way, I swear on my life I did not bring this up just to like sort of shoehorn in Bobby Bonilla somehow.
I believe
you. It just came up because he was talking about deferred money.
Well, and Shohei's obviously the most famous of the cases right now.
Sure.
And there's just so much money. I mean, it's a $700 million our deal, and there's so much of it that's deferred, and the idea behind that with Shohei was simple. I mean, like, okay, for years, Tom Brady, for instance, would take so much less than anybody else should have, and people always wondered, is he getting a part of the Patriots stake under the table? Like, what's going on here? But his thought process was, well, it's a capped league, and so I gotta take as little as I can to help out the team. Shohei's thought process is, in the deferred money standpoint, very similar. He's still getting as much money as possible, but the part that's similar is that he's like, oh, well, it opens up a lot more money that you can spend right now. And I do think it's not a bad point that you bring up. I mean, more so than the Dolan side of it, but like the Blitzer or Cleveland owner eventually should be considering something like deferred payments if you have a window and a team that is ready to win right now.
And we all thought that this team was it. Like, they made the ALCS last year. This would have been the perfect time.
Right, like if they had initially given J-Ram the discounted deal and said, Lindor, you're on a payment plan, essentially, you could have easily had both of them here and then just not paid any of that for another 15 years as if Lindor's on layaway.
And you think about it, like, Lindor got what, like $300 million? Like, that deal now seems like cheap compared to what like guys like the new big stars that are getting deals are getting. Like that's like what he's making right now is like pennies to like Juan Soto's deal.
Yeah, 15 years from now it'll seem like an actual discount. It'll seem like the discount that J-Ram just took. Now, you still do have to pay that money. Like, it's not Monopoly money. And so for the Dolans, they probably are like, well, we don't ever want to pay that money anyway. But you're not wrong. It would have been an easy way to just have a lot of good graces and get in a lot of people's good spirits and actually open up the pocketbooks a little bit here. Like, I like that Jason went after him because I've been going after the Dolans for years in that department. My answer's always been simple. And I've talked to people at the Guardians about this. I don't complain about the Dolans because I think the Dolans are going to change. My problem I have with the Dolans is they're not Mark Cuban. You know, my problem with the Dolans is that they're not one of these billionaires that's going to come in here and be able to write as many blank checks as they possibly can and know that when they sell, the valuation will be 10, 15, 20x what they bought into, and that's where the real profits come into. But I want the billionaire that is going to look at this like he bought a fancy piece of art, or he bought a private island and just wants to use it as a vehicle to brag to his friends with. That's what I want.
That's 100% how I treat ownership. Like, if I was rich enough to be an owner, it wouldn't be this thing for me that's like, well, hey, how can I do I want to make some money off of it? Of course. But like, my main goal would just be winning as many championships as possible and fielding the best team so that I could smear it in the faces of like my other owner friends who are also all rich and are coming to hang out on my yacht for burgers.
You're not going to lose money. We're in 100 years, we're yet to see a team sell for less money than what was initially bought for.
And that's always the key point. That is always the key point. Is like, when these owners buy these teams, the money no matter how much money they spend in the in-between while they own it, the money you get back at the end when you sell it is like quadrupled. Like, it's
always goes up.
Like, Dan
Gilbert's
selling 10 to 15% of the Cavs right now. Just from that sale, he's gonna make like, I don't know the exact, like,
it'll cover
estimates.
His initial buy-in.
I was gonna
price.
Say, but I think I was gonna say, like, I'm assuming it's gonna be like at least what he paid to buy the team. Like, that's that's absurd. That's absurd. And now Dan Gilbert obviously is a different situation. He's a billionaire who is willing to spend.
But Dan's great.
And he's shown that.
Dan would be an awesome Guardians owner in many ways. He's worth $35 billion. He'll spend money. He doesn't necessarily care about if he loses or nets. And by the way, they do net. Don't let him fool you. But if he loses or nets $50 million in any given season, he'll be fine.
Can you imagine the arc for Dan Gilbert if like his time here in Cleveland as an owner went from he buys the Cavs, gets LeBron, then loses LeBron, Comic Sans letter that everyone hates him for.
Yeah.
LeBron comes back, wins a title, and everyone's like, kumbaya, but we still don't really know, like, do we like Dan Gilbert? Do we not like Dan Gilbert? Then now he's building this team right now where he's going into the tax and doing all these different things. And I think of all the owners in town, like, he's perfected the balance of, I will spend money on the right players, and now I'm willing to be patient and employ the right people to like build an actual team for me. So he's balanced it all perfectly. And then if he were to buy the Guardians on top of it and then turn them into a title town, like the arc from villain, we hate you, you don't belong here because you ran LeBron out of town and you were too cheap, to all of a sudden him being like this this icon who wins championships with both the Cavs and the Guardians would be absurd. That would be awesome.
It sounds unreal, but I would have taken Haslam just the same way as I would have taken Gilbert too. Haslam's worth $11 billion. He uses these things as more of a braggadocious thing than anything. Yeah. Hence Brownstown and the podcast that comes with it. Like, he loves this stuff and he loves bragging to his friends about it. But he also understands that's why he did everything with the Bucks. He's going to own the Bucks one day 100% outright. That owner's cash poor and they don't have the money to pay all these different players. That's why he was given the stake that he was given. Like, no, it's going to happen. Well, it's headed down the tracks, but I would have taken either one of them.
Yeah, but that's why when I talk about the three owners, I think, like, Dan Gilbert's balance figured out everything. He's figured out how to, like, build a team, be patient, employ the right people, and spend the money. Haslam has the money part down. We know he's willing to spend what he needs to spend to try to win. That's not a problem. He just has to figure out the football side of it. And then on the flip side, the Guardians have mastered the, like, player development to a degree and, like, operating in the margins and finding ways to be competitive, but they just don't have the money to back it to actually, like, take that next step. So it's kind of funny that, like, you have an example of, like, all three things being true in this very town, and the Cavs probably feel the closest to a championship of any of the teams in town.
It's hard to get, like, the perfect person in that regard. It just is. Let me ask you for tonight, where's your interest in this Guardians game? I feel like so many fans are at such a low point with this team. Cubs have been playing really good baseball. It's a nationally televised game. Four of the next five are on national TV. So you got to, I mean, these are the moments that, I mean, the Guardians have been playing such bad baseball. It feels like you never want this opportunity right now. But anytime you're on national TV is always a big time deal. But it feels like the Guardians had people's attention this last weekend. People were wanting them to prove them wrong. And they failed at it. And I don't know how long of a leash they have with people's eyeballs and the attention that they would want based off of what we saw over the previous week of play.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be way more interested if they had actually called up somebody of significance that we've been talking about for like 2 weeks now.
Well, so is that what it is? Like, are we waiting? If they call up Kafis, if they call up DeWater, you know me, I watch every one of these games. It doesn't matter anyway. Like, sports is just what I do at night. So it doesn't, I mean, I'll watch cornhole on TV if it's the only thing going and it's 8 o'clock at night. Who cares, right? So like, I just love sports. Yeah. That's what I'm about.
Do
I know you're very similar
too. Bets on FanDuel on cornhole. By
not on cornhole. I got caught watching cornhole the other day, and it was a mixed doubles event, a mixed college doubles cornhole event, and my wife was like, she was mocking like the one. My wife's like very sweet and very nice, but she just this one girl that was playing just did not have it. And my wife, she just glances over. She's like, I could make these shots. Like, what's going on? And I'm like, I know. I think that too.
You guys get really into it. That's great.
It's absurd. Why is cornhole on? It's on all the time these days. I have no idea why.
It's big. I don't know. It's big.
But I'll watch. That's just how much I love sports. I'll watch basically anything that's sports on television. And minus the WNBA, of course. We're not watching that. I like the game above the rim. And some of this is very sloppy right now.
Well, so.
Very sloppy right now.
In terms of my interest, though, like, I think that this week. I do think there's a level of, like, once one of these prospects get up, like, your interest is back on it. Just because you want to watch at least that guy.
But we're in that set in between
right
those,
now,
the problem.
Right now, I think this is the last week, like, without something like that happening, that you are sort of hyper-focused on the Guardians. Because this is kind of a... I feel like this is, like, a make-it-or-break-it week. I know we could say that about the last, like, 3 weeks.
But, I felt like last week was make-it-or-break-it. And then they got swept.
If you show a pulse against these next three teams, the Cubs, the Tigers, and the Astros, all of whom are leading their respective divisions... Then I think suddenly people are like, okay, well, maybe there's something there. And if they do call these guys up, like, maybe we have a fighting chance. But if you flop and flounder in this next week, then I think people then will 100% be checked out on this team until, again, something like that happens, like Chase DeLauder gets called up and then you have a reason to watch again.
I feel like last week was that week. Last week was that week of, like, all right, we're hanging on by a thread. We are in for these games. We're going to make sure that this offense actually does something. And then they didn't show a pulse. They laid down and died.
This is the problem with the Guardians. I talked about this on Saturday. Or, like, they always do this where they give you, like, two games where they can't score. And then all of a sudden they give you like a 10-run game where they like blow a team out and you're like, you're sucked right back in. Like, well, hey, if Gabe Arias can do this more regularly, I know he's hurt. I'm just saying, like, as an example, then we're going to be okay. And so it would be so Cleveland Guardians to last week. That would be so Cleveland Guardians, though, to like be as bad as they were last week against bad teams.
They went
like
9-16 in June. I watched them be the worst offense in baseball for the month of June.
And then for them to start July with like a sweep of the Cubs. Wouldn't that be the most Guardians thing ever?
It was a different month.
But wouldn't that be the most Guardians thing ever if they start the month like sweeping the Cubs and then it's like, yeah, we know we were bad a week ago, but we swept the Cubs. And then you got Stephen Vogt after the game like, hey, we're right in the thick of this thing. We're playing some of our best baseball, like he tends to say.
Yeah, they have one good game and all of a sudden Vogt would be like, this is the offense I told you guys could happen. 216-474-0092. What's your interest in tonight's Guardians game, Matt? And Spencer's perfected something. I'm ready to have my mind blown here. We'll do it next. It's Afternoon Drive right here on The Fan.
Part of it is like the actual game of like Tetris in the car where you pack everything. I already think I'm pretty good at that.
Like, as much as my mom used to always tell me, she would help pack things and then she'd be like, it's because I played Tetris for years. And I was like, whatever, you help me pack. You can talk about whatever you want. She was good at it. Yeah. But I'm like, you can talk about whatever you want as long as you help me pack.
The reason I think I'm good at that is because like the 4 years of college where my mom would like, I'd pack the car with my mom and like she'd have everything a very specific way in the car to get things to fit. Like that, I think has made, but more so the reason what I think I perfected is because as long as I can remember, my like family vacations were always like very stressful before we got on the road. Like it was like getting out the door. Somebody always forgot something, packing the car. My parents were like at each other's throats, just like yelling about like this going here and this going there.
I don't remember any of that growing up. I just don't have the same experience.
I want to make it clear. Like our family vacations are always very enjoyable, but it was always just getting in the car and on the road and then like getting back and all that. Like it's always like a stressful thing.
Okay. Okay. Maybe I didn't take as many car family trips though. Like we'd always go to St. Louis. Okay. We go to St. Louis every year. It felt like for like a Cubs Cardinals weekend series. We'd always end up doing that, but maybe we shouldn't spend enough time in the car together.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if you don't do that enough, because
where'd you guys go? As a child, where'd you guys go?
I mean, like, part of that was, like, we would go to Boston every other summer. We would drive up there. We didn't have a lot of vacations where we flew. Even the one time we went to Disney.
I just feel like I didn't have many vacations growing up.
I'm not trying to make your childhood sound like disappointing.
I went to Disney when I was five, and I went back there with my wife, obviously, a few months ago.
Yeah.
And I just kept talking about all the memories I had of it and the different spots. Yeah. And I was like, maybe I just remember it so well because... We only took a couple vacations. Yeah. I just don't remember many vacations. Yeah,
I mean, like,
up.
We drove to Disney. Like, we didn't fly to Disney. We drove. Like, so it was everything we did.
A vacation at 5 to Disney and another one at like 12 for a baseball camp in Branson, Missouri. Like, that's my childhood vacations is basically that, it feels like.
So, as far as I can remember, though, like, that was always one of the most stressful parts of like the experience. But what I think I've now found the last like two trips we've taken or a couple trips we've taken. Is if you like, I give to give yourself a buffer Like, don't make any plans the day you're leaving. Just be like, hey, we can leave when we need to leave, whenever.
Yeah.
Just don't set a time.
Which is the advantage of a car trip, by the way, is that you don't. It's not like going to the airport where you have to catch a flight at a certain time. Like, you're just on your own leisure.
A couple weeks back, we were going to Philly to meet my new niece. My brother and my sister-in-law just had a baby in January, so we were going to meet her.
Yeah.
And we kind of told ourselves, like, yeah, we might leave at this time, but it's not really that big of a deal if we don't. We ended up leaving like 2 hours later, and we just took our time. We packed the car. There was no stress. It was just like, my wife packed her suitcase. I brought it downstairs. I put it in the car. I got my stuff, packed it, put it in the car. Like, it was just like very casual. And that's the same thing we're doing tomorrow. Like, we did not set a time to leave. We're driving up because we're going to the Adirondacks. So it's like, we passed my parents' house on the way and they live in Rochester. So like, we're staying at my parents' house for a night. So it's like, we don't have any obligations. We have no plans. We're just, so I've realized that this concept of, don't be like, we have to leave and be out the door at this time, makes it so much less stressful when you're just packing, because you can just take your time, pack it all up, get the car all organized, get everybody in the car, and then you get on the road. And if you forget something, okay, yeah, we'll just go back. We're only 5 minutes down the road. It's okay. So just don't make any plans that first day, or give yourself like a buffer day where you can get to where you need to get to feel like you're in a comfortable spot to then the next day, maybe you have plans. That's the key. That's it.
I'm going to be honest. I really wanted like a new way of packing. I don't know what, you know, like bags or something like that. I'm like, what do you have that's different? Did you find out something on the TikTok shop? I don't know. Like, what's your secret?
Well, no,
it's just take your time.
Yeah, no, it's just give yourself a buffer day. That's what it is.
A whole day?
I mean, it doesn't have to be a whole day. But
I only got so many days off. How many days am I using as a buffer?
Give yourself maybe the better way to put it is like, don't have a schedule. Like, just don't have a schedule up until like you absolutely have to have a schedule. Just like have a casual day where it's like, hey, we can pack. We can be good. We don't have to set any times of like when you have to be out the door. Now, I understand that changes if it's like, we have a flight to catch so we have to be in the car at this time.
No, but that's the beauty of a car trip.
If you're driving, you don't have to set. That was always the problem. My mom was always like, we'd always ask my mom, what time are we trying to leave? And she'd be like, well, we're going to be on the road by 6 o'clock. And then inevitably, we would never be on the road by 6 o'clock because it would always take a lot longer. She had just said, yeah, we don't know. We'll just see where the day takes us. It would have been a lot better.
An easy way to make a 5-hour car ride, for instance, into like a 9-hour car ride, though. I feel like when we went to Chicago a couple weeks ago and we drove, and I like driving for those short little 5-hour trips. I think they're fun.
Yeah.
But like, we stopped at a different place and then you get gas and all these other things that you just wouldn't even, like, you have to account for, obviously, but you don't account for. You just think it's a 5.5-hour trip. And then before you know it, it's like an 8-hour trip. Because you stopped for 45 minutes to eat, and then you stopped and you did this and you did that. Like, if you take your time, you really can stretch these things out.
What's the rush? It's vacation. Why do you have to set schedules for
I want to get to the lake. I want to get where we're going. You're going to Lake George. It's not going to, I'm not going to swim in Lake George by myself. I got to get there eventually.
That's true. But I mean, I don't know. This is like my new revelation that I discovered this summer.
You just being chill is your revelation.
Kind of, yeah.
We could have got you a gummy and a six pack and done the same effect, I think.
As you know, I'm not into vibes.
Here's the thing though, too. Like, I think the problem is like, my wife and I have always been big on like, all right, so what time, like, we've always tried to set the schedule on certain things.
Yeah.
And that always just comes back to bite me in the ass, because inevitably I'm always the one who's like late or like, I estimate my time.
The
like,
problem is that when you set a time for yourself, you're then making yourself wait off of a timeline that you set yourself.
Right.
Well, you don't have to do that.
And I always think in my head I can make it. So that's the problem. Like, even this applies to just
it's
like,
not a game.
Just like life in general. Like, yeah. I might be out in Berea at like Browns practice one day and it's a busy day. Like, I don't know, maybe they made a quarterback change and there's a lot of big news. And I'll be like, I can get all this done by like 5 and I'll be home for dinner at 6. And I'll tell my wife that, and then I'm not home for dinner at 6, and then she's mad at me because I'm not home for dinner at 6, like I said. So I've just realized now it applies to vacations, but I guess bigger picture it could apply to other things in life. Just don't set schedules. Just be like, I will be there when I get there. That's what's going to happen.
You're going to make a lot of people in your life really mad. Using vacation mode into your regular day is going to make a lot of people mad. It's like, where's Spencer? I made this great dinner. I thought it'd be around 6 o'clock or so, and then you come walking in at 9:30 at night. I was taking my time.
Did you watch that show Landman on? Did you have time for that one or no?
I have time for all sorts of shows, but I don't know what is Landman.
It was a new show that came out.
It does not sound like the type
it's
of show that I would
Billy
watch.
Got Billy Bob Thornton in it.
And now we're talking. Oh, now we're talking.
It's,
okay,
it's basically about like this.
This looks pretty good.
It's like the oil industry in Texas.
This looks pretty good.
It's like he's like this oil man in Texas who like
I thought
runs,
you were going to do like a Marvel type thing with Landman. Like what's his secret power is land.
No, that's
he
the one that
surveys land.
Landman is the one that has the Jerry Jones cameo in there.
That was a Marvel superhero yet to be discovered.
I was like, these names are getting really lame, aren't they? They're getting really out there and lame.
They've run out. They've gotten the Landman.
What's his secret power? Property taxes.
But the reason I brought it up
assessing land.
There's this whole theme in the show where like his wife is always like, "You're gonna be home for dinner, right?" And he's like, "Honey, you know my work, like." I could be home by 6. I could be home by 10. Like, I just don't know what the answer is. And I was like, that's what I need. I just need to be like, hey, there's a window of time and I might be home, but you know what I do? It's you know, I could not be. I might be. I might not be. What do you want me to say?
This show seems awesome. Where has this show been hiding?
It's
by
on
the way?
Paramount.
I do like
yeah,
every
Paramount,
time.
Plus. Paramount.
I do like every time they want to call someone a redneck, they describe them as roughnecks.
That's like their way of calling themselves rednecks.
Yeah, that's what it is. They're not roughnecks. Yeah. Roughnecks and wildcat billionaires. Try to get rich quick. All right, Billy Bob Thornton, I'm in.
It was actually a really good show. It was good.
Is it just one season?
So far,
yeah. But I think it's going to get renewed. It's the same guy that made Yellowstone.
I have such a hard time doing shows that I know will be one season and then are just out and done. I have such a hard time.
You
wanted
to have like a few that you can like binge at once.
I need
basically.
To know that the show is still ongoing. Gotcha. I want to start to invest my time in it because like if it happened for one season, it could be great. And I just call it then a limited series.
Well, that,
I probably know if it's not that, if it's not a limited series, then it probably didn't end up with a great conclusion that I'd be satisfied with.
We made that mistake with Game of Thrones where like we timed it perfectly where we started watching Game of Thrones like leading up to the last season. And then, of course, like the last season happened and it was like, well, that was disappointing. Those seasons just to get to this disappointing end at the right time.
By all accounts, that was just one of the worst final seasons in TV show history. I'm not even a Game of Thrones guy. I never got into Game of Thrones. It's one of those shows that I don't like that. It's not my genre, right?
Yeah.
But where I should have watched it is the idea that even if things aren't your genre, if they're that wildly mass appealing,
it was a phenomenon. Yeah.
Then it's probably going to be good, even if you're not into a bunch of dragons and a bunch
that
of things
show,
that just can't happen in real life.
It was on a trajectory to be like one of the best shows of all time.
Yeah, completely wrecked
it
itself.
It just
well, you started having Starbucks cups and scenes. Like, well, what are we doing
yeah,
here?
That was bad.
It's $1 million productions, and you got Starbucks
you got
scenes left and right.
Just drinking her Starbucks off on the corner. Yeah, not great.
All right, Robert in Brecksville. What's up, Robert?
Hey, so it's funny. You just randomly started talking about like road trips and you know packing and going on your own schedule, which you're 100% right. You know, it's like flying is convenient and everything, but when I go out to Seattle, the last few times I go out there. I drove across the country instead of flying, so going west, it's incredibly easy because it's like I have the extra hour of daylight to play around with. So from Minnesota to western Montana, it's like I would stop in central North Dakota at the Theodore Roosevelt National Park.
So I've done that ride.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful ride, like but I've done that.
I would
ride.
Love to do that
when
one
you
day.
Go through, when you go through Painted Canyon the Painted Canyon Visitor Center, I think is what it's called. It's like, you know, it'd be like standing in Independence and Valley or in City View and overlooking Valley View and down on the canal, but much, much more expansive. And it's like, I'm usually there for 30, 40 minutes. And then from western Montana to Seattle, right as I get up to the Columbia River Valley Gorge, you know, I'm probably there for a good 30, 40 minutes anyways, you know, standing there looking at the valley right where the river's dammed up at, and yeah. I can see an army of wind turbines on the other side of the valley. So it's like going west.
All right, Robert, I got to put you in the hurry-up right, offense yep. here, man. Okay. All right, thanks, Robert.
Yeah. By the way, is Mount Rushmore like just South Dakota's way of being like, hey, we have something?
People tell me that Mount Rushmore is very disappointing in real life.
That's what I mean. I feel like it's just their way of being like, hey, we have something.
It's very underwhelming. And you know what? Good for South Dakota. I'm happy they do have something. But I hear it's very underwhelming in real life.
It's not really a place I desire going.
John Fanta, not underwhelming at all. He'll join us in 5 minutes with the latest in the Cavs, Gardos, and of course your Browns. It happens next right here on The Fan.